Thank you for tuning into Coastal Cafe. My name is Aaron Barnett, and I'm your host for today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of the University of Washington College of the Environment and the Washington Sea Grant Program. University of Washington, KPTZ 91.9 FM here in Port Townsend, a partner to bring you this show. Coastal Cafe offers the latest in marine science with researchers, policy experts, and people who live and work along our coast. Today we have on our show Scott Edmondson. Scott is from the Pacific Northwest National Lab Marine Laboratory based in Sequim, and Scott has been working on algal biofuel stock resource, stuff like that. Anyway, Scott can tell us more about it in a minute. Anyway, Scott comes to us with 12 years of experience in studying photosynthetic algal cultivation for waste remediation bioproduct generation. He has a Master of Science in Interdisciplinary Ecology from the University of Florida and a Bachelor of Science in Botany from the University of Florida as well. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you. So, first off, could you give me some background on yourself and your interest on algae?
Yeah. So, my interest in botany or plant science actually started as in my undergraduate at University of Florida. I started as an aerospace engineer, actually, and I was taking a mandatory class called Botany for Poets. And it was a mandatory class for people who are not going to be botanists, basically. And the professor of that class so impressed me with how just cool plants are that I was sold. From that point on, I took on undergraduate research projects with that professor, so I was able to get some lab experience, hands-on lab experience, and just really loved being in the lab and working with plants. That kind of led to me taking botany on as my degree and really going deep into understanding plants and really falling in love with photosynthesis and just how amazing that process is. Further on in my studies, I took a tropical ecology class where we went to Costa Rica for a semester. And there, one of the instructors there had this class that was humans in the environment. And we took a field trip to a landfill. And that trip to the landfill and seeing the impact of humans on the environment really was an eye-opener for me. It was the first time I had that, the magnitude of human impact on the environment. From that point on, really trying to connect the potential of photosynthesis to address these major environmental problems became a focus of what I wanted to do. And that really came about while I was in Costa Rica, in the cloud forest there. I got an email, which was kind of unusual for being in the jungle to get an email or being in a rainforest. And the email was for starting a bioenergy school at the University of Florida, where we would do these different bioenergy-related projects. And so I signed up for that in Costa Rica. I had no idea what it was going to be. I got back to Florida, and that began my my career in algae started from that moment when we started making biodiesel from waste products of the university. And we quickly realized that we could turn all the waste vegetable oil into biofuel. And that wasn't a problem, but that was only a drop in the bucket for how much fuel the university was using. And it's, when you look at the bigger picture, it's so minuscule in terms of the amount of the fuel the state and then the country and then the globe is using. And then you look, okay, well, maybe we just need to grow more energy crops. So we need to not just use the waste vegetable oil. We should use that to be more efficient. But we should be growing more soybeans or something like that. Really, the eye-opener was in 2006, there was a paper published in the National Academies. They did an interesting thought experiment where they took, they said, what if you took all the soybean oil the U.S. produces and you converted it all into biodiesel? How far along would that get us? So imagining you outlawed French fries and you couldn't use soybean oil for frying anything and it all had to go to fuel production.
Oh, no.
Drastic thought experiment, yeah. The conclusion of that study was about, you could meet about 6% of the national transportation fuel demand. And it gets worse because when you look at the fuel that went into actually growing the soybeans and harvesting the soybeans and processing the soybeans, it drops to about 3%. So understanding that the magnitude of fuel that we need to generate is beyond the agricultural production of typical crops is what led to looking at algae as a feedstock for biofuels.
Yeah, and I guess microalgae as a feedstock is considered solar energy because it basically captures solar power.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. So some people and like to describe algae as tiny green solar factories, and so you can imagine these. Many algae are small single cell organisms, and so you can imagine that they're tiny little solar panels with built in batteries.
So what's been going on with this in your work over at the labs in SQIM? And let me back up. Could you give a little brief background on the SQIM labs just for our audience that didn't know that there was a PNNL lab right in our backyard?
Yeah, sure. So Pacific Northwest National Lab has the DOE's only marine sciences laboratory, and we're located in SQIM right on SQIM Bay.
That's the Department of Energy, right?
That's the Department of Energy. The Department of Energy's only marine science lab is located in SQIM. And it's a multidisciplinary lab, so there's a lot of different research projects going on at that lab, dealing with wind energy, wave energy, how do you use the marine environment for generating energy and critical materials. There's also restoration work. A lot of eelgrass restoration work goes on at the lab, and also trace analytical work for detecting elements and organic compounds.
I see. So could you go into more detail on your work over there?
Yeah, so our work is focused specifically on growing algae as a renewable, sustainable biofuel feedstock.
So what kind of an engine could you burn that in? Let me just put this out there in a hypothetical. I mean, you have algae making fuel, you pour it into some tank, and then it powers some sort of engine. What kind of engine could it power?
PNNL has developed a really interesting technology for converting algal biomass, or really any organic biomass, into what we call biocrude. And essentially, that's a replacement for petroleum crude. So it's a renewable replacement for petroleum crude. So you can, after you process the algal biomass into biocrude, you can then refine that biocrude into nearly any product you could get from petroleum. So gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, you can get all of those derived from the algal biocrude. So it's we call it a drop-in replacement fuel. So it's a direct replacement for petroleum.
So like say a bulk container ship, for example, with engines that can burn, you know, what they call bunker fuel, which is cheap,
right,
nasty. What kind of modifications, if any, would a vessel like that have to take on to start using a biocrude or fuel of some sort?
Probably very minimal modifications, if any at all. So depending on how you clean up the fuel, you have to remove the water, of course. If you remove the water and particulates, the fuel should be, you should be able to use the fuel directly.
So just like in any diesel type engine that relies on not combustion, but heat, pressure to create combustion as opposed to an internal combustion, you know, an explosion caused by a spark, it's pretty simple.
Right. So for diesel-powered engines, you would want to distill the biocrude to get the diesel distillate fraction.
Right.
Before you ran it in the engine.
So to give it a viscosity to get to the injectors.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. Okay. All right.
So very different than the biodiesel approach, right, where you're starting with an oil and you're making a completely different molecule than diesel fuel.
I see. So does Department of Energy also have plans to bring this technology to a market? Are there any public or private entities involved with this research that are eyeballing it?
So there's a lot of interest in this field, and the interest goes up and down with the price of oil, as you would expect. The Department of Energy's role really is to de-risk this technology so that a commercial entity can come and take it on and turn it into a commercial business. It's not at that point yet. The technology is still really in the developmental phase, and proving it out in the field is kind of where we are now. The challenge really is everything looks good in the lab. The lab is the controlled environment of the lab is easy to get amazing productivity results with algae. For example, some of our fastest growing strains can double their biomass every 2.5 hours. So when you're thinking about, well, we want a feedstock that grows really fast, this is the kind of organism we want. When you try to replicate that environment in the field, it's much more challenging under the dynamic natural conditions of fluctuating light and fluctuating temperature. And so when you think about how big the scale needs to be, we're imagining going from flasks to football fields, and then not just a single football field, you need tens of thousands of these football fields. So moving that amount of water is, it's a engineering challenge, to say the least.
Wow. That's something to think about. So if you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. I am Aaron Barnett, host of Coastal Cafe. Today I'm speaking with Scott Edmondson from the SQIM Marine Laboratories, Pacific Northwest National Labs, operated by Battelle under contract from the Department of Energy. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
The same people that bring us Richland at the Hanford nuclear site. Have you done any work over at Hanford?
I have not. All of my work has been at the SQIM Marine Sciences Lab.
Okay. You can buy microalgae as a food stock in the form of what they call, spirulina.
That's right.
Is that the same stuff, or is it a different type of algae than spirulina?
No, that's algae. That's a cyanobacterium. I like to include those broadly in my definition of algae. Algae is a very fuzzy term. To give you an example, there's about 40,000 named species of algae, and some of those algae are more distantly related to each other than humans are to mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So the diversity, the biological diversity of algae is just phenomenal. Some of them are just completely unrelated. And so it actually is really amazing because it's this huge biological resource. They've had to live and adapt in environments and come up with ways of surviving in environments that are totally unique.
With respect to this algae and what you're doing at PNNL, what has your research found so far?
Yeah, so we are part of this multinational lab consortium called the Discover Project. And DISCOVER is an acronym. It stands for the development of an integrated screening, cultivar optimization, and verification research.
Wow. I don't think I remember that, but that's okay.
So basically what that means is we're looking at, so as I said, the algae are extremely diverse. What we're doing is, can we screen some of those algae, figure out how they grow, turn them into cultivars, which would be agronomically relevant crops. So you think about wheat or corn, and the varieties that are grown are called cultivars. So these are cultivated varieties, which is where that term comes from. So we're looking for cultivars of algae that would be equivalent to these mass-produced, robust, resilient strains of agronomically important crops. So we've screened, and we screen algae as we screen algae for their tolerance to different temperatures and for different salinities. So the two big things that we have no control over, or the single biggest thing we have no control over out in an outdoor pond is the temperature of the pond. So like traditional agricultural crops, you have summer crops and winter crops. Algae are really similar. If you're growing in a temperate location, you're going to have to grow a summer crop when it's warm and a winter crop when it's cold. A lot of the strains that we have available in these national algal culture collections, there's very little information about how do they grow, what temperatures do they thrive in, and what media do they grow best in. So we're kind of taking some of those strains and screening them for whether they're summer strains or winter strains, and whether they grow in brackish water or whether they grow in marine water.
So you're creating a database and baselines for potential industrial applications.
Exactly.
So they can say, oh, we'll grow this in the summer and you grow that one in the winter, and you know, the industry won't have to experiment.
Right, exactly. So the idea is to look for strains that are extremely productive and robust as well, that aren't crashing or aren't difficult to cultivate. And also the salinity is a major component, because different algae will have different tolerances to salinity. So whether you're on the coast and you have seawater, or whether you're growing them inland with a brackish water aquifer in Texas, say. So we do the screening as a function of salinity as well.
So I would imagine that some of the folks listening to this are wondering, well, how does that compare to fossil fuel coming out of the tailpipe? So, I mean, are you versed on any of the emissions comparisons?
I am not. There are currently studies where they're taking this algal fuel and they're the final fuel products, and they're burning it in engines. And they're doing the engine emission mm-hmm. tests and everything. I can't really speak to the details of that. As far as the general information that I know is that it's very similar to fossil fuels. So it depends highly on the engine and how you operate the engine, for what's the particulate matter and what's the NOx and the SOx and how clean your emissions are. In terms of carbon, it's really similar. So the main difference being the carbon that you're emitting as you burn the fuel was recently fixed by that algae. Mm-hmm. So essentially, if you do it right, it's carbon neutral. And if you do it even better than right, you can make it carbon negative, because you can displace the consumption of fossil fuels.
Well, that's good to know. I know that with biodiesel, that there's a common misconception that it's all wonderful, but it actually does increase NOx emissions in certain engines in quite a bit.
That's right.
Compared to fossil fuel. Which leads me to my next question, which is sort of tangential. Have you or anybody done any forecasting on the near, middle, and long-term benefits of using this type of fuel or fuel stock?
Let's start with, if we back up and say the near-term benefits of growing algae, I'd say we can bin the using algae fuel as probably not near-term. But if we look at other benefits of growing algae that are near term, you can see that maybe there are some things that line up that help move the farther, longer term fuel use, move it to fruition. So algae can be used for a number of things, such as waste remediation. So there's a couple research groups that have been looking at growing algae on wastewaters. So you can use algae to scrub the nitrogen and the phosphorus out of wastewater. So think of sewage wastewater. So instead of dumping that in the environment and causing what I call uncontrolled algal blooms, or some people call them harmful algal blooms, which are often caused by cultural eutrophication. Mm-hmm. So cultural human increasing the nutrient content in the waterways. So instead of causing these uncontrolled algal blooms, if you can control the algal bloom and direct those nutrients to intentional cultivation of algae, you can then harvest that algae and use it as a fertilizer. You can use those algae they've done studies for using algae proteins for animal feeds. Like you mentioned, spirulina is a human food. So some of these algae have really high protein content. So this is a near-term use for algal biomass, is the high-quality protein content of the algae. So that also feeds into aquaculture. So there's lots of aquaculture opportunities for algae that are current. Shellfish farming and finfish farming often use algae, either phytoplankton or kelp, for feeding fish and shellfish.
Huh. Now, is kelp is an algae, right?
Kelp is an algae.
Would that
yeah.
be called a macroalgae?
That would be called a macroalgae.
Okay,
you got
okay.
it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, I think we're going to be wrapping up soon. So I have one more question. What drawbacks do you see to incorporating algae with some of these applications, if any come to mind?
So the major current drawback is economic, and that is really why I say that algae fuels are more of a mid to long term goal. And to give you a sense of that, I guess in 2011 there was a large consortium project on how do you get algal fuels to market, and the estimated cost of algal fuels at that time was around $200 a gallon, which I think is too much for anyone to be willing to pay at the pump, even me. So since that time, we've been through advancements in cultivation and fuel of conversion. We've been able to get the estimated projected cost of algal fuels at scale to around $15 to $20 a gallon. Hmm. So we've made a huge improvement in the past 8 years or so in the projected cost of actual algal biofuels, but we're still, five times too expensive to compete with petroleum-derived fuels.
Well, that's a really good note to end this on. I'd like to thank you for coming in, Scott. I've been talking with Scott Edmondson from the Pacific Northwest National Marine Lab in Sequim. This is Aaron Barnett, host of Coastal Cafe, which is a joint production of the University of Washington Sea Grant Program and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, Washington. I'd like to thank our program manager, Larry Stein, and our production engineer, Jared Dufresne. I'd also like to give a shout-out to the Native American Indian band Ku'ik for providing the opening and closing music for the show. Please remember, our oceans are a precious resource that all of us can work together to preserve for all generations. Have a great day. Mm-hmm.